Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Indoorsman, your podcast guide to the great indoors. I am your late night host, Matt.
And I'm equally late night co-host, Cliff.
It's late. We're recording later than usual due to schedule conflicts. You'll get it exactly the same time, so it makes no difference to you. But we're recording late, which means we can say rude words.
Oh, shit, the watershed. Yeah.
Yeah, fuck the watershed. I'm going to literally fuck the watershed.
I mean, you make sure you bag up first because splinters and stuff.
Well, true. Yeah. Don't know what's been in those pipes. Mm. But anyway, it's been another week where you thought you could get away from game news, but you can't, because guess what? Another fucking event was on. It was Gamescom this week in Cologne, Germany, which is kind of like alternative E3. Not a lot of new news, but more coverage of stuff that's already been released. A couple of sort of surprising new developments, which is good. But we can never escape from having new news in the video game space. And I follow all of it. But what have you been up to this week, Cliff?
I've been playing more PUBG, of course.
Of course.
Got a second in solo today, early this morning, which was bullshit because the guy that was first was behind a car. And I knew he was behind a car, so I shot the shit out of the car, and the car exploded, and then he didn't die. I was not very happy, and then I put three or four rounds into him, and he killed me. So not very particularly happy about that. But, you know, more PUBG. Yay.
Well, it's still early access, so...
Yeah.
Apparently car invulnerability is still an option.
If anyone that's ever played the game will realize that anything around vehicles at all is interesting... Hilarious is a word that's used often. Weird shit happens around cars all the time. Motorbikes, holy crap. If you have a motorbike, things just happen and you die and you're left wondering what the shit just went down.
I did see that the next map coming up for Blunkbat is sort of a heavily sort of dense cityscape.
It looks like it's mostly a city. And then
sort of smaller but more vertical.
Yeah. And then there's some outlying regions and things like that, but it's for the most part, it looks like a major urban area, which is going to be very interesting because it means that you would think shotguns and snipers are going to reign supreme.
And more verticality maybe points to the idea that their sort of mantling mechanics are going to come into play around the same time, because if you're going up and down buildings, that will make sense.
Yep, there's already a certain... element to buildings, because there's already multi-story buildings, apartment buildings, that kind of stuff. You can get on roofs, tops, and stuff like that. So you just might be able to get onto more rooftops that you won't be able to get onto before. But it's definitely going to be a thing full of stairs to the rooftop. It's going to be pretty crazy. There's already a lot of that going on in the urban centers in the game. So yeah, that's going to be interesting. I'm not sure how well I'm going to go. My tactic is mostly just hang out in shrubbery and then shoot people when they're near me. And it seems to work pretty well. Didn't work the well in one of the other games this morning where a dude shot me from about 500 meters away and I was in a bush because foliage way off doesn't load past a certain point. So you basically become like, look at that dark speck half hanging out of that bush. And then sniper. So, I mean, that's something that's been in all games like that. They have like a very... large scale thing. There comes a point where you just can't draw shrubbery. It might be interesting to see if they can actually do some sort of detection where if you're in shrubbery, it might make you maybe not set the opacity maybe on your character, so you're harder to actually see. But you know, that's something that's going to be would be very difficult, but I'd like to see that happen, because at the moment it's very easy to get shot from hundreds of meters away, even though you should be safe in a bush. No one would ever see you in a bush at that distance, but they pick you up because they can just see your dark outline in a badly, drawn bush. So, you know, there's problems with those style games.
Gotta hate a badly drawn bush. And I mean, I have no experience with this game or real concrete knowledge whatsoever, but I'm just going to say, Vertical City, jetpacks?
I don't think we'll be seeing jetpacks in this game, no.
There's not been a good game with jetpacks in a while. There was, Dark Void on the 360, I'm pretty sure, which was sort of based on the Rocketeer, which had jetpack sort of traversal. The jetpack traversal was good, the game was bad, but I miss it, because the jetpack was really fun to move around in.
I feel like I played a game recently that had a jetpack.
Really?
Yeah, but I can't think of what it is. It just sounds super... Oh, I mean, No Man's Sky kind of has a jetpack.
That's a... I would call that more of a jump jet. And I mean, if it's a jetpack, it's the shittiest jetpack ever invented.
When you upgrade it fully, it's pretty great.
You still don't get a lot of climb distance when you're flying in it.
Oh, you do when you've got it upgraded.
Apparently I never found the right upgrades because there's no clear upgrade tree.
So I've got no real necessarily problem with that. But it's better because you can actually buy blueprints and stuff because you get nanites from shit instead of random things. Anyway, let's not talk about No Man's Sky anymore.
Let's not. We've only done that most episodes so far.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been playing anything else besides more PUBG?
I have, actually. I got into some VR last Monday at a mate's place. He bought a...
Oh, yeah.
What's the Facebook one? Rift. That's the one.
Rift, yeah.
Yep. So he's got a Rift. So I went over there and we actually watched the wrestling pay-per-view because wrestling is ridiculous and hilarious. There were some funny moments where one wrestler just randomly was out of the ring. Like it was a three or four way match or something like that. And all of a sudden the camera just cuts to him running into the crowd, runs up, grabs a beach ball that was being thrown around and just returns to the ring, ripping it apart and then just jumps back into the fray. It was the most random thing ever. That was pretty good. But anyway,
all right.
Then we played some VR afterwards. And I played, what did I play? I played a bit of the Valve Portal one. You know, the one they had where you could, you had the robots and stuff.
Special levels, right. Yeah.
So I played a bit of that.
We had like some extra mechanic you could use or something?
It was not the actual levels itself. It's a, it's a tech demo where you're a mechanic. I think you're working on that one of the actual robots itself and you can kind of, everything explodes away and you can get right in and around it and you can think. I didn't actually play that part of it. I played some other parts of it, but the height configuration wasn't done right. And my mate actually realized what he did when he didn't read the instructions when he was setting the height for that particular aspect of it. It was all right for other games, but it said, enter the height, like your height. So he wrote 6'2", because he's 6'2", no problems. And then the problem was he didn't have the thing on his head when he said 6'2". He had it on a table in front of him. So it thought the table in front of him was 6'2". Yeah, so you were standing at about 8 feet, and it was horrible. So there was, that was all right, but I did play some, Super Hot VR. I actually played that last night when I was at his place again. That was very, very fun. What I did play and absolutely love though, was a Drift.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've played this, not in VR, but I have played it.
So this has, whenever I go on about VR controls and I bitch and moan about the teleportation, I say you want to be able to move with sticks. And then move your head around and look around that way. So you have that actual control in a Drift. And it was awesome. Being able to move with the, you don't play with the actual individual hand controllers. You play with a 360 or an Xbox One controller. And you use the sticks to move around, up, down, and you use the triggers to, use your little space jetpack to go up and down, as well as, strafing and turning and that sort of stuff. That was amazing. It worked perfectly. Now, after playing for 5 or 10 minutes and actually stopping, I didn't feel weird when I was playing it. But when I stopped, I started to get vertigo after I'd stopped.
Oh, yeah.
It was a bit weird. But,
I've had that with a couple of games.
But after the fact,
you kind of have trouble readjusting to the real world.
Yeah, so I think once your brain kind of got... if you played it more and your brain got used to what was actually the input it was getting, I think the vertigo would go away. Pretty well, but it was awesome to do control like that and then look around and things like that. So that was good fun. I really liked it.
No, I really enjoyed Adrift. I played it on PC because it hadn't been confirmed for PS4 yet, where I would get it for VR. It's come out to PS4 now. I don't know if the PSVR support has been released, but I would like to play it because I've heard good things about it. There's another game.
It's tripping his balls when you're outside the craft and you're looking around. It's like, oh yeah, there's a giant Earth. That's pretty cool. And there's the void of space. That's pretty disconcerting.
The other one I've seen that apparently does sort of traversal really well in space is one that it's for the Rift and Touch, where Lone Echo, where you're sort of moving around outside of a space station doing repairs and stuff with an AI robot.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the traversal is, rather than sort of, point and teleport or jump jets like you do with a drift, where you're sort of using your oxygen supply. You're actually literally grabbing things in the environment and pulling yourself.
Okay, yeah.
So you can sort of grab handholds on the outside of the station, push off from it, all this kind of stuff, which, yeah, sounds like it'd be really cool. But it gets the same sort of thing where you can get some vertigo either going in and out of it. But apparently it's the most comfortable sort of motion control they've managed to achieve so far. So I would love to try it someday.
Mm. The key is definitely sitting down to play. That way you can feel, your body can feel that you're actually supported. And that kind of thing. So that was good. I played a few other demos as well. There was one demo that you go through, and it was like going through, I don't know if you have much experience with it, but the 3D mark benchmarks. Whenever you got a PC, you would run a benchmark, and it would take you through an on-rails 3D environment, and the different environments, the different runs were meant to stress test your computer in different ways, and it would record your frame rate and give you a score at the end, so how well your computer compares. Not so much used
literally
anymore.
Never used one of those.
Yeah, not used anymore, but back in the early 2000s, they were everything. Everyone was looking at those scores for a computer rig. And it was like this. So you're going down you're at walking pace going down a road, except that everything around you is in bullet time, and it's in a future setting where you've got these future cops or SWAT team kind of guys, spec ops dudes, shooting down at a giant robot at the end of the street who's firing back, and it's the bullets going through there, and you get the ripple effect off the bullets and the distortion stuff.
Nice.
And you go to that, and there's a moment where a trash can comes across your face, like across the front of you, and you can see your hands, and you just immediately try and swat it out the way because it's getting in your field of view. So you got to swat it, and your hand just goes straight through. And my mate said, I did the exact same thing when it was there. So I tried to swat it as well. And then you get to the end and you don't really realize how big the robot is. And then it lunges forward and roars in your face and it gets right in there. And you do a quick pull back because you're not used to it. But that was very impressive.
Nice.
And then played, I think, it's a Rift demo, kind of like Job Simulator. You're in a little RV, and there's all kinds of tech around. You can 3D print things like your gun, so you can then shoot stuff around. You can generate a bunch of butterflies come out, and you put your finger out, like you have your hand, and you squeeze the trigger, and it puts you into a fist. But if you leave one trigger not pressed, it has a finger out, and the butterflies come and land. So butterflies everywhere. Then the next ones get a gun, and you're shooting stuff. It's a Nerf gun, so you're shooting Nerf bullets everywhere, and they stick to stuff, which is pretty cool. And then I had that, and I'm like, oh, look, there's a butterfly, and then shot the butterfly, and it explodes into a bunch of pixels and stuff. So that was pretty fun.
That poor butterfly. I haven't really pulled out the PSVR in a little while. I did see a Kickstarter went up, I think, late last week for what's basically Nintendog's VR. It's a game where you raise a puppy and you can dress it up and play games with it and stuff. I will give it marks for the name, though. It's called Rover. ROVR,
of course it is.
That's pretty clever. I'll pay that. But yeah, you're raising this little corgi, and you can play with him and pat him and wash him and all this kind of stuff.
That's gonna raise $1 billion.
Oh yeah, I think the Kickstarter's already sort of looking pretty strong. I mean, they've got about a third of the way through their time, and they're at 5,500 out of 30,000. So not tracking super great.
I feel like that hasn't been publicized enough, because if people knew about that, they would dump money in it so fast.
Yeah, not to mention that they're saying that on top of the VR game, they'll have an app for iOS and Android, or definitely with iOS at least, using ARKit, where you'll be able to take your dog with you
so
and sort
you can
of walk him and stuff.
Tamagotchi it while you're out and about, and then play it in VR when you're home.
Pretty much.
If that gets the right publicity, that's going to make $1 billion.
Yeah, I would say so. It's also a pretty cute rendered little puppy. It's kind of cartoony. I like it. So that's sort of what you've been up to, VR and...
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Dying in a field?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I feel pretty proud, but also confused, because this week I managed to finish 3 games.
Well, I mean, you've been perpetually on the verge of finishing a bunch of games, and then you just keep switching out whenever you get close to the ending of one and play the other.
Exactly. I never finish games. So I almost felt like I was doing something wrong when I finished games, because I'm like, oh, I can't play those anymore. They're done. But it also felt good because I can move on to other stuff that I've been ignoring. Firstly, I finished Hellblade that I was talking about last week. Excellent wrap up to that story. The sound design just got better and better with all the binaural stuff. I really enjoyed it. Other than I did hit one or two annoying bugs towards the end. You go through a bunch of trials throughout the game. One of them's a kind of a darkness trial where anytime you're not in the light, there's a big beast that's chasing you. If you've spent too long in the dark, you die. But it's kind of a flexible period of time depending on how far you've got to travel from sort of area to area. And also, it gets very dark very easily, so if you don't know exactly where you're going to begin with, you can get lost, stuck on objects, not know you're stuck on an object, and die. Which is annoying, because it has the whole mechanic where every time you die, the sort of the curse rot stuff on her arm moves further and further, and if it reaches ahead, you die for good. Your save file gets deleted. It's kind of their permadeath thing, so getting stuck on mechanic stuff is kind of frustrating. For the most part, you're running in straight lines, so it's pretty easy. So long as you've set everything up beforehand, you're fine. But at one point, I died literally half a foot away from the light because I didn't realize I'd sort of clipped the edge of a gate. And yeah, that was really frustrating. Mm-hmm. But I got through it in the end, and the story wraps up really beautifully. And almost maybe suggest they might come back to this as a second game, which would be weird because it's something that Ninja Theory have never done. In the past, they've done Heavenly Blade, the remake of DMC, Devil May Cry, and the Enslaved Odyssey to the West. So they've never really done a sequel, but if they made a sequel to this, it would be amazing. It's a fairly self-contained story, so I don't know how they could.
Plenty of things have done that and come back and just... You get to that thing, like you start the next game and or movie or book, and it starts out, well, you think you had a grip on what was going on? Ha! No! Here's the actual, like, you know, skinny on what's gone down, so...
Yeah, this game has been in development for years and years and years and years. The really interesting thing was they actually had, a making-of video that was about 20 minutes long available in the menu of the game. That very strongly says, don't watch this till you finish the game, because it does spoil everything. But it's talking all about how they developed the tech, how they did the sound recording, and also how they brought in experts and sufferers of psychosis to give sort of their feedback on how the game should sort of feel to sort of represent this illness. And yeah, it was really interesting, and I really enjoyed playing it. And I highly recommend it for anyone who has a PC or a PS4, to go and get it and play it with fucking headphones, you idiot. Otherwise, you're not getting the proper experience. I let the game play for like 2 minutes without headphones on, and it wasn't the same experience. I can't recommend it strongly enough. Also, really funny watching them record the dialogue for the voices talking in your head, because they move around your head, and they literally had three sort of actors circling this binaural microphone, just sort of whispering at it and making weird noises and stuff. It was pretty funny.
Out of context. Things when you see it from the outside and it looks hilarious. Yeah,
it's just ring around the psyche.
Yeah, it's like watching someone in VR. It looks ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, it's the best.
So people like swatting.
Watching people play in VR is better than playing VR.
Swatting at the air, ducking out the way in stupid ways. Yeah, it's good fun. We put one of our friends.
Yeah,
in
when
there,
I had
hilarious.
A friend of the show Pete over to play Super Hot VR. Watching him play that was maybe better than the game.
Yeah,
when bullet dodging and all this stuff.
When our mate Jared got into VR, there was one point where James was standing a bit too close, and Jared went to swing a punch, and he almost clocked James doing it. It was funny. James had to back right away.
Yeah, I got pulled up while playing it with someone else watching for Superhot because, you know, the whole thing is the world only moves when you move. So sometimes you get into position, but time hasn't tracked fast enough for you to have the thing happen that you need to have happen. You don't want to get out of position because you know that it'll end up with you with a bullet to the brain or something.
Yeah.
So I developed a habit of just sort of spinning my hand.
Yeah, you kind of flounder of like, a bit around, don't you, just to get it moving.
Yeah, yeah. Literally just like flicking my wrist in a circle and say, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up.
I was doing like these time. Ones. Just moving my hands out in front of me in circles, just trying to get it to speed up.
Yeah, so, it was an effective technique. I'm not going to apologize for that. Not one of the games I finished, though. I still have to finish Superhot.
What I did notice about the Rift is one thing that would be awesome to have is the ability to, in your field of view, pause whatever you're doing and actually have your webcam show you where you are in the room in case you get, you move around and you're not really sure where you are. Instead of having to pull your headset up, you could just get a shot of where you are.
The Vive actually does that.
It does. Ooh.
There's an option where you can, I guess, hit a pause button or something, and there's a little mini camera on the front of it. So if you hit it, it basically gives you like a little like front view mirror kind of thing. So it just comes up at the top of the screen showing this is what's directly in front of you right now.
Yeah.
So I guess with the room space VR, if you're coming up on an object, you can pause, see what it is you're about to run into, kind of reorient and get the game going again.
Yeah, because you lose your spot in the room very, very quickly. Because obviously the Rift doesn't have the camera, so just pipe it in for our webcam if you've got one. Why not?
Yeah. Just give you an idea of what's going on.
Hmm.
One of the other games I picked up and finished this week was the new Uncharted, Uncharted Lost Legacy.
I've seen the first hour or so of this game. Boy, is it pretty.
It is so good. Yes, it's beautiful. The facial animation, just like in Uncharted 4, is top-notch. To the point where Chloe Fraser is played by Claudia Black. You can kind of see her expressions.
She is the best. It was so good hearing her voice in that game.
Like, hearing her voice, but also, like, the mannerisms being her. Mm. Like, I mean, the animation's always been good in these games, but with the full motion animation and the full facial capture, which has taken, like, a huge step up this game, or this generation of game, I guess, it feels more real. And Chloe Fraser as a character, plus Nadine Ross as a character, who's, like, the hard-ass South African mercenary woman.
Buff arms.
Oh, yeah, no.
She's ripped as fuck.
She wrecked Nathan Drake's shit in Uncharted 4. Like, literally beat the crap out of him in a collapsing building. But, yeah, so she's a hard-ass, very kind of militant and reserved, controlled. Chloe Fraser is just kind of like, eh, whatever, let's climb this building. We'll see if there's some treasure just in it. Like, yeah. Whatever. That, you know, it's the whole, they start off as enemies and they get to be friends and then there's conflict and then they're better friends.
Classic odd couple.
But, oh my God, the dynamic between them is amazing. Also, it takes like 4 hours before they even mention Nathan Drake, which is fantastic.
So when is it actually set?
It's set after Uncharted 4. They've set about 6 months after it finishes.
Right, right.
So, the you know, 6 months since Nadine Ross stopped being the antagonist in Uncharted 4 and kind of gets recruited by Chloe to be her muscle slash partner on this adventure to find the Tusk of Ganesh. It's sort of a famous Indian artifact. I don't know if it's a real one or one they've invented for the game.
And a little girl spends a great portion of the opening thing trying to steal slash buy a little Ganesh trinket little Ganesh from Chloe.
That little girl's great. So it's kind of all the same mechanics and everything as Uncharted. You know, you're climbing, things are falling apart under you, you fight some guys, you commit mass murder, and then go back to being like charming and lovely in cutscenes. But they've added sort of better fighting for sort of melee. So you have a bit more control over it rather than just punch and dodge. Nadine comes in and sort of does combo moves, which look really awesome. I think there's one where it's literally like, I don't know what it's called, when you sort of crouch down behind someone and trip them up. They basically have a combo that's that. You sort of crouch down on hands and knees behind someone, the other person pushes them over, and they fall down.
The classic frat boy prank.
Yes. So the combat's similar, but not exactly the same, so there's some more stuff in there. And it's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
So great.
It when I was watching it is basically Uncharted 4 in that it is ridiculously destructive. It is sequences that are great and then a bunch of boring, like, let's kill 50 or 100 dudes and then great sequences. So it does have its flaws, and, you know, if you're going to mention the flaws, and that is just the ridiculous kind of set plays they set up. We just got to kill like 20 guys and then it all comes down and then you're cracking jokes again. Like, it's just a bit. That part of it has always been the bit I found kind of weirdest about the game. Other than the fact that fingers are like adamantium, apparently. They do not break.
Do not bend. They've got amazing wrist strength.
Yeah. So it's a great game, but yeah, it seems like it gets tiring, basically. that where you
yeah.
you know what's you know exactly when it's going to be a sequence where you got to kill 20 dudes as well. It's kind of telegraphed a mile away.
Yeah, I mean, the arenas, they're a little bit better this game round. They're not quite as easily broadcast that this is a fighting arena, but they're still there. I mean, and Uncharted 4 did kind of lampoon themselves on this. There was the achievement in the game, ludonarrative dissonance, which is a term for that kind of divide between character and action, and you got it for defeating 1,000 enemies in the course of sort of plays of the game. So they know this is a thing, and they haven't really found the right balance. Like, I ended up just playing on a light difficulty so that the combat sections were really easy, because I was there for the climbing and the exploring and the story and the banter, which I can't highlight how great it is to have two so distinct but strong female characters hanging out, like, sorting out the differences, becoming best friends, and just, like, shitting on everyone else constantly. Like, I don't want to go into it too much because kind of pulling specific examples would spoil stuff. But they're having fun, and it's good, and I like it, and everyone should play it. It's great. Get it.
While you were speaking, it just popped into my mind, it's got a very Indiana Jones feel in that Indy is always just behind the Nazis. Like, he's yeah. like the Nazis have already just got to wherever he is, and he has to, you know, fight them. So he's yeah. perpetually going to new places and finding himself, like, just, you know, just second place, because the Nazis are just there. So it's got that kind of feel to it, which it does.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of Uncharted as a whole. Yeah. It was always kind of like a love child of
totally Indiana Jones,
and yeah. Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was an amazing adventure. Like, it was shorter than I would have liked, but it was still a solid maybe 8 to 10 hours. So bigger than the DLC it was originally kind of planned as, almost as long as Uncharted 1, but obviously with a massive graphic and storytelling uptick from that first game. Go play it. I also finished Rime, which I talked about a couple of months ago. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually realize I was on the last level of the game, but it had a very kind of satisfying narrative end. So it was nice to kind of wrap that one up with a bow and then kind of set it aside without ever finishing the trophy list, because I can't be bothered with that stuff. I just can't.
Some games I can be, some games I just don't give a shit whatsoever.
Yeah. So yeah, I've sort of been roaming around my library of other games to play. A lot of stuff I tried to pick up, you know, it's been too long and I can't remember the control schemes, and obviously at a point in the game where you need to know them to play effectively, so that's kind of hung a hat on a bunch of games. But I am playing through the King's Quest game at the moment, yep. which I got to the end of the second episode and then kind of forgot about. It's very good, but I was reminded that they had a whole stupid thing where there was an epilogue chapter to the game you could only get by buying the full version.
Oh.
And that's specifically buying the entire game up front.
Right.
I bought the first episode to try it out and then sort of bought the remaining episodes as kind of the season pass. Around the same time they announced this epilogue episode, saying that I would never be able to get it.
Wow, so, that's kind of a dick move.
It's a super dick move.
Yeah, it should just unlock if it detects you've got all the others.
Yeah, I mean, buying the full game to get the thing, within a time window, fine. But saying that I can only get it if I pay, I think it was like $50 up front for an unproven adventure game.
Yeah, an episodic game as well.
Yeah.
If you're going to release episodes, you don't be a dick and give it to... Yeah, that's a massive dick move.
Yeah. Early adopter, fine, but give me the option to buy it, you know, 6-12 months after the game finishes, something.
Yeah.
Like, Telltale can get away with this kind of season pass stuff because they're proven. Like, you know what you're getting with a Telltale game. You know the quality, you know how long it's going to take to get all the episodes.
Speaking of which, next Guardians of the Galaxy's out too. I should play that.
Yes, I'm stuck halfway through episode 2. I have to decide whether I'm going to go to Half-World or go find Nebula.
Chose Half-World.
Was it good?
That is the heartbreaking shit.
Okay. That's what I like from a Telltale game.
Get your feels on, go to Half-World, and then...
Yeah, I can always watch a Let's Play of the other
path. Then once you've reassembled your shattered soul, then then you can go and find Nebula.
Okay, cool. Good to know. yeah, so I've kind of been casting around for stuff to play. King's Quest. I started playing a game called Masquerada Song and Shadow, I think it's called, which is kind of a top-down Diablo-y kind of fighter with, you know, ability things down the bottom. You can pause time and cast actions. It's got a really great voice cast. The art's a little average. Because it's not from a big studio or anything. It's fun and interesting. It's all about a world where you've got masks that give people magic powers. So everyone's got sort of like opera masky type things on. And there's all the big voices, like Matt Mercer's in there because he's in fucking everything. And a bunch of other recognizable voices that I don't necessarily know the names to associate with, but I know, oh, you've done 600 games that I've played.
It's like, oh yeah, you're that character in that one and that one and that one.
Or you're a character in every single anime that's ever been released in English. Mm. Yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's just not as polished as I would like. Kind of the textures are a bit low grade. It's good, though. One of the cool things is when characters are talking, you know, have your dialogue boxes with the portrait of the character.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of comes down on a little hanging banner, so it sort of unfurls and flaps around a bit, and then they appear on it.
That's nice.
And they sort of animate while they're talking and stuff. But I realized that they're actually animating, it's just a representation of the character who's on the field at the time, because you can see the same kind of animations playing out. They'll move, they'll walk.
Oh, okay.
So it's this really clever thing where they've got sort of the main sort of locked isometric camera, but then there must be sort of an in-game camera that's sitting in front of the character's face to capture them exactly.
Image, but from a different angle.
And yeah, replicating it in the same way that, you know, like the screens in Half-Life 2 or Portal did.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool little bit of tech in a game that's otherwise not AAA. I'd say AA. I'll give it a AA.
Mm-hmm.
But I might need to put more time into it before I make a final decision.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's what I've been playing. And unfortunately, in 2 days' time, I will get Mario & Rabbids Kingdom Battle because I hate myself, but it looks good.
It does look kind of fun.
It looks so good. I'm literally going to take my Switch in with me to work on Tuesday, pick up the game, and play it during my lunch break. So,
nerd.
That's my life. Yeah, whatever. But yes, actually, speaking of Half-Life and Portal's cameras, there's a little bit of news.
Boom.
Baboom?
Yeah.
This might have been one of the things you wanted to talk about, I think.
This is one of them. Holy shit.
Yes, I believe it was Mark Laidlaw.
Who wrote everything.
Yeah, who wrote most of the Half-Life games,
yeah.
Or was at least a heavy contributor. He leaked what was very clearly a badly disguised copy of a Half-Life 3 script.
That was, the names were completely different, right? Completely different.
Yes. Like Grodan and Alox instead of Gordon and Alex. Yeah, it seems like he pretty much just got sick of them not doing anything. I don't actually know if he's even with Valve anymore.
He actually recently retired, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
And then he wrote this letter, which was supposed to be the plot of episode 3, Half-Life 2 episode 3.
Yeah.
And boy, did it sound fun. It sounded real fun.
Yeah.
And it got dark too, with some crazy-ass twists.
Yeah, it's sort of delving with the Borealis stuff they were talking about, kind of the blending of the Aperture tech into the Half-Life universe. I think maybe we should avoid specific details because there are purists out there who won't want to hear it.
Well, theoretically, it doesn't matter. It's not a spoiler because it's not canon.
Yeah, and it's not for episode 3. It's for Epistle 3.
Exactly. Effectively, it was a... It sounded like you're going to spend a bunch of time on a teleporting Aperture science ship called the Borealis.
Yeah.
Going through all kinds of weird and wonderful time and location changes while trying to rein in the Combine with some weirdness with Breen and the lady doctor, which name escapes me right now.
Juliet?
Yes.
Something?
Her. Who's flip-flops back and forth, double agenting or triple agenting. Judith? Is that right, Judith?
Judith Mossman.
Yes, there you go. So yeah, it sounded super good. It sounded like there's some crazy twists there. Of course, involving G-Man, and some shit goes down with Alex, which is craziness as well.
With Alex and the G-Man?
With Alex putting a bullet in another character.
Yep. Like
execution style.
Also, they were talking about, in the summary, Breen, like, Overseer Breen being dead, which apparently happened in the previous episodes. I don't remember
At the end of Half-Life, I think. Half-Life 2, sorry. He goes down, I think.
Does he?
It's something like that.
I swear I remember him being on screens and stuff in the episodes.
But apparently he's back in his Grub Breen. Or Breen, yes. Grub.
And one of the Overseer Grub things.
Yeah.
That killed Alex's dad. Which is not a spoiler because it's been literally 3,000 years since that game came out.
Yep. And yeah, so it sounded like it was going to be some awesome stuff. It sounded like there was going to be a moment where Freeman basically got a bunch of visions, and the visions were so, I guess, crazy that the idea was you just can't beat the Combine. What you fought so far is a speck, is a drop in the ocean.
Mm.
You can't defeat them with apparently a Dyson Sphere, which is pretty crazy. So, yeah. If you don't know what a Dyson Sphere is, it's a massive structure that completely surrounds the sun. So it can take all of the energy from a sun and convert it into, you know, power and stuff like that. And you live on the inside of a sphere. So imagine running around in Half-Life 3, if that was where it was supposed to finish off, but running around inside a giant sphere. So like inside the Game of Thrones like intro, where the world curves up and away instead of down and away.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be kind of crazy. And teleporting all over the place as well. So you on one side of the sphere and then teleport to the other, but you can see the other side of the sphere. That would be cool.
Yeah. And I mean, with the teleporting boat stuff, it seems like they were going to pull some lore from the Philadelphia experiment. Mm. Kind of the...
It did have that kind of fabled feel. Yeah.
Disappearing ship. Which actually one of my favorite podcasts is based on. If you like time travel and weird science and comedy and an entire episode about swear words that is one of the most funny things I've ever listened to, check out Ars Paradoxica. It's about a woman who accidentally invents time travel and sort of turns up in the 20s on the ULSS Philadelphia at the same time it was meant to disappear. So yeah, that was an interesting read. Half-Life 3, may it someday come to be, but if not, hopefully Black Mesa's kind of remake of Half-Life 1 will at least come out.
And of course, being crossing over with Aperture Science, you know, the possibility of a Portal crossover, which I still think a great Portal 3, Half-Life 3 would be, where you can play as one or the other or both in co-op mode.
Tandem.
With a gravity gun, one with a portal gun. Can you imagine the shit?
It would be a nightmare of game design, but I would play awesome. The shit out of it.
Well, you know, they've only had 10,000 years to be planning it, so...
Yeah. It's been literally a million years.
Yeah.
Just put it out. You have to make Half-Life or Portal 3, one of the two. Just do it.
The biggest kick in the crotch isn't Half-Life 3 not coming out. It's the fact that we were told Half-Life 2 Episode 3 was coming out, and then fucking like 6 months nothing.
After 2,
just nothing at all.
Just radio silence.
Lord Gaben.
Which is disappointing.
Fucking hell, come on. Get on it, son.
I can't help, but I can yell at you till you make it happen.
Stop counting all your Valve money, because we know that, you know, it's rolling in dump truck by dump truck, you know, multiple times a day. Stop that shit and actually make a game for a change.
Yeah. Speaking of dump trucks, I listened to and watched a garbage piece of media this weekend on Netflix.
If you say you Death like Note. Again?
It was Death Note. It was so bad.
Ryuk was just fucking creepy.
Ryuk was very well animated. I liked that bit.
His voice was great too. Willem Dafoe.
Yes. Mm. Being voiced by Willem Dafoe, an actual living goblin, was a very good choice. But, well, for one thing, I thought this was a mini-series.
Yeah, it's just a movie.
Which would make sense. No, it's an hour and 40-minute movie, which does not cover everything, and also does a lot of character assassination. Light Turner, the American based out of Seattle, who's now the main character, is not a genius. He's not smart at all. There's none of the mind games between him and Elle that the sort of anime and manga had. It's just too condensed, not enough happens, it doesn't make sense, and they focused a lot on gory deaths for no good reason.
Apparently it was a Final Destination movie.
A little bit.
Mm.
The first death, which has been in trailers and stuff, so I'm not worried about spoiling it. Also, this is garbage media, so I don't care. He writes down a bully's name and decapitation, and you see him get decapitated, and it's early seasons of Walking Dead kind of gory, where it's basically just an exploding sack of meat.
The early, like season one of Walking Dead was woeful.
Oh yeah, it was.
Yeah.
This is just, yeah, not great. I watched it and I'm glad I watched it because now I'm like, I should go back and watch the actual Death Note anime because that would be good and would unruin this story for me.
It just,
because I watched a couple of episodes and I know it was all about sort of flaunting the rules of the books and all this kind of stuff, which just did not get covered at all in the movie.
It just seemed like the, what they did was, you know, making an American version perfectly fine, whatever. Like that story that they've got could be literally anywhere in the world. So they've got no problem with that whatsoever. It seemed like they shot themselves in the foot when they decided we're going to go movie instead of a complete season of TV. Because it's just too much in there. And it is a bunch of mind games between, you know, murder kid and genius detective.
Yeah.
Squatting, I mean, Batman. Doesn't he, L, he squats a lot?
Didn't seem that smart either. Yeah, he sits weird and he holds things weird. He but they didn't even nail chairs. That.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which the thing in the original is that he always, like, when he's holding a book, he's like holding it with two fingers from above by the spine.
It's always
like
weird, creepy, like he's afraid of catching something that's on it. He's always making little contact with
objects as possible. But yeah, they didn't even get that. Like
super eccentric character, yeah.
The few things I remember from Death Note are, the fact that it's called a note instead of a book or notebook or whatever. And the way that L sort of holds a phone, like a rotary phone, with two fingers from the top and sort of near his ear. And yeah, like reading books by barely touching them. But no, didn't get any of that right.
Yeah.
So
I do. I watched a bunch of the anime. I remember stopping before the end because it had that, I guess it's kind of a thing that a lot of anime does. It just gets way too much up in itself and around, and it just starts twisting and turning, and what starts out as something, a lot of anime start brilliantly and then they just get too complex at the end and just
jerking off to its own rule set
pretty much. They waste a good start and then go to the end, but it's a very, very good anime
but not a very good movie. If you want to watch a movie of Death Note, go watch the original Japanese ones, because they made multiple movies rather than a single one to try and cover the entire thing. There was like four or five of them. So fuck this shit.
But definitely check out some clips of how creepy Ryuk is, because he is super creepy. And
the animation is excellent. Oh, they did full mocap for Willem Dafoe's face and everything.
He looks great when you can see him. In a lot of the clips they are out, he's even creepier because you don't get to see much of him. He's just kind of there and just off to the side. Like
that
just
was actually
out.
That only happened for about 2 minutes in the movie. The scenes where he was sort of in shadow for the trailers and stuff, that's actually a lot lighter in the real movie. They kind of obscured him purposely for the trailers.
That's a shame, because it worked really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, but enough about that garbage fire. Let's move on to some good game news that's come out sort of either from Gamescom or in conjunction with Gamescom. Firstly, they're remaking Secret of Mana.
Really?
From the ground up. It looks really pretty. It's got voice acting, which is not going to be great. But it's fully 3D in kind of a cutesy style, and it's going to be great.
Chibi Secret of Mana.
Kind of. Like, it's kind of extrapolated from the actual art style of the original.
Which, of course, they can't really get too much detail, because it just wouldn't look like the game anymore. So you got to scale up, but keep it simple.
Yeah, so it's keeping the spirit of it without sort of...
That's interesting.
Strictly. Yeah. I was worried that it would be sort of built off the same engine as I Am Setsuna and Lost Sphere, which they'd sort of been developing new RPGs for. And it's not... It's a good engine, but it's not very diverse. But this looks to be a whole new thing. I'm quite excited for that. Also, it's not actually Gamescom news, but kind of harking back to VR. Did you know that KFC does their training in VR now?
Apparently, yeah. I did see this.
I watched a playthrough of this KFC training game, which is basically teaching you how to make KFC chicken. It is the weirdest shit. Like, you're talking to what seems to be a robot Colonel Sanders, who hates machines, and insists that all of his chicken is touched by soft, supple human hands. Direct quote. And yeah, it's It's terrifying. Mm. I mean, it's kind of cool in a way that VR's becoming a thing, like a workplace thing, but this was the weirdest example of it.
Yeah, I don't really know what the point of this was, other than to make them seem cool.
It's definitely trying to be cool.
Like,
it's
edgy new boss. So. We understand. You want to play games. Yeah. No.
But, like, at one point, the first step of preparing KFC chicken, Cliff, is observation, checking the chicken to make sure it's okay. So you have to pick up all the pieces of chicken, visually examine them before you put them in the thing. In there, they had included with all the actual pieces of chicken, like a squeaky chicken toy. And if you pick that up and try to examine it, the Colonel Sanders face on the side of the wall shoots lasers out of its eyes and disintegrates it out of your hand and tells you off.
That's pretty funny.
Fucking terrifying. Yeah, so go watch a video of that because it is bizarre, but I really want to play it. I want to see if it has achievements. Oh, God. KFC, well done, but also please never ever do that again. Oh, do you remember the game Brink?
Oh, that's now free.
Yeah, just randomly went free on Steam. It turns out that someone actually managed to find one of the guys behind... is it Obsidian who did Brink?
I have no idea. I don't remember much about it at all.
Splash Damage. It was Splash Damage, published by Bethesda. Yeah, it was kind of a team shooter thing. It went free randomly on Steam and no one could figure out why. Someone finally managed to get a hold of one of the guys from the company and he basically just said, well, why not? Like, it was selling for 99 cents on Steam, the last sale. What kind of profit are we really going to make on 99 cents? So, whatever. They just put it up and it's had the greatest number of concurrent players since it came out back in 2011.
I mean, that's what freeness does. Everyone loves free shit.
I really liked the game when it was announced because the character design was kind of cool and had lots of sort of visual customization. Never bought it. So now I've got it on Steam and I can give it a try. And I don't have to worry about my computer not being able to run it because it's 6 years old. Which is nice. Also, actually news from Gamescom. The guys behind Just Cause, or some of the developers originally behind Just Cause 3...
Mm-hmm.
have moved on to a new company and announced their new game at Gamescom, which I'm very excited about. It's called Biomutant.
Right.
Where you're playing as this little kind of raccoon-looking animal creature, and you sort of gain new powers and abilities by mutating yourself on purpose. And it seems like it's this big open world with all kinds of traversal and stuff. In the trailer they released... he finds a puddle of radioactive goo on the ground, sticks his hand in it, and it turns into like a lizard hand. So it seems like it's going to be highly customizable in how you look to what kind of abilities you have, even flashing through the trailer and some gameplay they released later on. There was a big variety of different ways your character could look. And also a lot of sort of ride-on vehicles. The best one, of course, was a giant mechanical hand
that he was riding on top of. It's Thing from Adam's Family.
It's kind of a giant mecha thing. Awesome. Best part was, though, at one point he needs to use it to fight an enemy, so it basically makes a finger gun and shoots a laser out of its pointer finger.
Nice.
So I would pay the game just for that. Mm. But yeah, like, I'm excited for this because this kind of character customization is what I love the most. Also, I hope it has a better frame rate than Just Cause 3 did on PS4 because that was a giant piece of garbage.
I have no comment on that. I never saw it. Not on PS4.
I know people who played it on PC that it was fine, but the Just Cause is a game about making things explode, yes?
Make not things explode, make everything explode at the same
everything
time.
Everything explode, yes.
While grappling and flying and parachuting and...
sort of doing snappy Spanish
and
one-liners.
Masturbating in your chair while playing it because of all of the above. Yeah.
I mean, I assumed that was implied.
Yeah.
But... unfortunately, despite a game that is entirely about explosions, anytime things exploded in Just Cause 3 on PS4, the frame rate went to like 15 frames a second. Basically unplayable. And you think you would plan for that? The whole idea is to cause chaos by making lots of things explode at the same time. But yeah, that and like incredibly low health just made the game unfun to play. So hopefully this avoids that by a lot, because less explosions, assumably... but I want to be a little mutant rat monster thing.
Sweet.
You can get, like, bat wings and stuff. It looks awesome.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, apparently there's more gameplay footage out there, so I have to watch it. I think it's been announced for next year, if they gave a date at all. But still early days, so we might find out more about it later. Another thing that happened during the week was the PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds Invitational that I saw a little bit of news about, because the guy won in kind of an unconventional way.
A very unconventional way. Winning it all without actually killing anyone.
Yes. He basically hid in the red zone and just healed himself repeatedly until everyone else died.
Blue zone.
Blue zone, whatever.
Yeah, blue zone. It is decidedly not safe. There's also a red zone, too. The red zone is artillery
missiles
bombing.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
And then you've got the blue zone, so you've got to stay inside the white circle, basically. And if you're outside the white circle, you're in the blue, and you're taking constant damage. And he kind of...
Red, white, and blue. Very patriotic.
He kind of hid out in some rocks down by the coast and just healed himself until everyone else died. Because you get into the last circle, and the last circle is tiny, and then it'll just shrink in to nothingness, and then it's whoever dies last basically wins. Yep. And he won it that way, apparently. I haven't actually watched it. I want to go back and watch it now just to see how this all went down, because it sounds hilarious and awesome. But kudos to that guy and his giant, giant balls.
Yeah. I know that the PlayerUnknown himself was doing some sort of talk at Gamescom as well, which I think would be really interesting to listen to.
Mm.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think what else happened this week. Secret of Mana by Mutant.
The Tick came out.
Oh, did it start?
It's out now. Yeah. I watched a couple of episodes. I'm amused by The Tick.
Good.
Yeah.
I should check that out.
It's not crazy. You're not going to laugh all the time. If you've got a very dark sense of humor, then that's what The Tick is. It's a very cynical take on kind of things. And they also do this, you think they're going to go down is The Tick even real? Or is he just this guy's imagination? And the main characters basically having a mental breakdown about it. And then The Tick, it's him and his sister and The Tick. And he's having a chat to his sister. And then The Tick says something, and he flips out. It's like, it doesn't even matter. You're not even here. She can't even see you. And then she just looks at him weird and says, "I can see him right there." this is in episode two, so it's not even. This doesn't spoil anything. It's basically just, oh, okay, cool. So he's not having a proper mental breakdown yet. Just a minor mental breakdown.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And Peter Serafinowicz is great.
Of course, yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm almost out of news. You get to pick the order in which I read about these. I have good news, bad news, awkward news, and weird news.
All right, give me some bad news.
Some bad news? They want to make an Origins movie for the Joker.
Yeah, I heard about this.
It's not going to be played by Jared Leto.
Yeah, but it's not connected to the DCU either, apparently.
Which apparently neither is the new Batman movie, which won't be Batfleck.
But apparently is... or not, depending on what Matt Reeves is tweeting at any point, so who even knows.
Don't try and explain the Joker.
Yeah, the great thing about the Joker, especially in The Dark Knight, was he didn't have a backstory. He just told a bunch of lies to fuck people that was fucked up and to mess with people. And that works perfectly fine for the Joker. Yeah. You don't need to know his origin. He's just a force is a response to Batman.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Joker is scary because he's the ultimate evil, because we don't know what happened to make him what he is, so anyone could become a Joker. Mm-hmm. If you gave him a specific origin, say the one from The Killing Joke where he was like a failed comedian, then that's specifically, this is the path to becoming the Joker, and that sort of quantifies his evil, which is not good.
There's also, if the unknown is scary, and exactly. Once you know something, you can use that to ultimately defeat this person, but because you don't know anything about him, how can you defeat what you don't even know or understand?
Exactly. Yeah. And that was one of the best bits about Dark Knight Rises, Joker giving all of his... Or was it just The Dark
Knight?
Just
The Dark Knight, yeah.
Yeah. Where he was giving all his different alternate origin stories.
The classic.
So it was more about entertaining himself than explaining.
How I got these scars, and it just changed every time he told it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and they were all messed up, and they were all equally plausible, and it's probably none of them.
Probably. So that's the bad news. Yeah, they're going to make it and no one's stopping them.
But it's going to be Scorsese, apparently.
I don't know if that helps.
Well, it just seems
bad idea with a good director is still a bad idea.
It just seems like it would be a mob movie Because the Dark Knight was effectively, he was a mobster. He was just a fucking crazy mobster. Scorsese does, you know, the mob, the mafia stuff, organized crime stuff. So I'm assuming it's going to be the same, but with the Joker in there. This is a movie that no one needs, or people probably want it now just because it's the Joker, but we don't necessarily need it. I don't think we need it. I could do without it. If I want to see the Joker, I'll just watch The Dark Knight. Because that shit's awesome.
Definitely won't watch Suicide Squad. And then, at the same time, on top of this Joker Origins movie, they're apparently sort of trying to float the idea of a Joker and Harley Quinn movie, which could potentially replace the Gotham City Sirens movie they're going to make, which is bullshit. Give me Gotham City Sirens.
Yeah, I just don't really care about this new version of the Joker much. He has the occasional mildly interesting thing, but he's just...
He's an edgelord, and that's about it.
Yeah, he's just meh. I really care for him much. Harley was alright.
Harley was good. Mm. Yeah. Also, the new animated movie Batman and Harley Quinn is very good and should be watched. Alright, so that leaves good news, awkward news, and weird news.
Give me the good news.
Good news? What was the good news again? Star Citizen has revealed some new tech that they will be putting into play for the game when it releases in 2960, which is perfect facial mapping for your character while talking, which is very true to life. They demonstrated it with one of the actors who's playing a main character in the game, who's the same actor who plays Sir Davos on Game of Thrones. Oh, right on.
That guy's awesome.
So this dude was sort of talking and explaining the tech while it was live mapping onto Davos's face. And, you know, blinks when he blinks, but not the way he's blinking. It blinks the way Sir Davos would blink.
Right, gotcha.
So, you know, he has kind of saggy-sided eyes.
The mannerisms and the tics and the quirks, yeah.
It looks terrifying, but also really cool. So it's some really advanced tech for a game that, let's be honest, is never going to come out in full.
Well, very cool, and I definitely want more of this kind of cool shit. Stop with the fucking extra bullshit bling and make the fucking game and release the game.
Yeah. Finish the game, release the game,
put the extra cool shit in. Yeah. No hope whatsoever. I mean, this is basically Half-Life 3 at this point.
Pretty much. So there you go. Cool tech out of a game that will literally never release. Yeah.
Elite Dangerous is better anyway. Because it's out. And that is the only reason. And there's no other point in the argument. It just is better because it's out.
I will never play it, so it doesn't really bother me either way. But if you release a chat app that lets me do weird face mapping, I would play around with that.
Also, I do realize there's a bunch of alphas and shit, and you can actually play the game, but
not the entire game.
It's not out yet.
It's just bits and pieces. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah. All right. Awkward or weird?
Give me weird. I feel like we should end on awkward because that's what our endings do best.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
So weird news is a new crossover for Final Fantasy 15 that was announced at Gamescom as part of the extended Final Fantasy 15 universe. Actually, two weird bits. Firstly, they'll be releasing what's basically a chibified edition of the entire story of Final Fantasy 15. With these little cutesy, sort of blobby animated characters, more in the vein of Bravely Default and stuff, where it'll be episodic and released on mobiles and potentially Switch. Retelling the whole story of the game with sort of clicky, tappy controls. I wanted to hate it, but actually it's fucking adorable. It's so cute.
I'm just shaking my head. That's the reason I haven't spoken. Holy shit.
The trailer they showed, like the reveal trailer, recreates the opening scene of the game. It seems like they've used the same motion capture, which is weird. And like Gladio, like the big bulky dude, he kind of looks like an eagle with the way they've sort of sculpted his head and beard. But I might end up buying it because it's really adorable. But that's not even the weirdest news.
You are totally going to buy it. There's no question about it.
Buy the shit out of that. But that's not even the weirdest bit. The new crossover that they'll be revealing as sort of a timed in-game event is the Final Fantasy 15 Assassin's Creed Festival, which is a crossover with Assassin's Creed, where one of the in-game towns will be reskinned in the same way they did with the Chocobo Moogle Festival early on, to be all assassin-themed to tie in with Assassin's Creed Origins. There'll be costumes, you can parkour up buildings, you can assassinate dudes because all your weapons get replaced with wrist blades. What the fuck?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
All of this extra shit, all this wank, and they're still not bringing out Final Fantasy VII.
I mean, and they're still working on the actual DLC episodes based on the different characters. The third one's yet to come out, and they've said there'll be a fourth one, but they haven't said who it's about.
I mean,
it better be about the princess.
I mean, I guess they're, instead of bringing out a game and then years after just beating the dead horse and bringing out a bunch of shit afterwards, they're just doing it all in one hit now. Just a constant stream of random shit no one asks or cares for, but we're still making tons of money for them.
Yeah, this is the same game that's also releasing a four-way co-op sort of squad-based mission fighter as side content to their main game. So they can pretty much do whatever they want, apparently, including crossover with Assassin's Creed. I don't understand it, but I will play it because I pay for the season pass. And I want to like run around the world as an assassin while talking about like how disaffected I am as the princess. So good job, Final Fantasy, I guess.
Just wow. I don't even know what else to say.
It's a bit like that. Well, that just leaves us with some awkward news to finish on. Unless it's more awkward than that. First. It's more awkward.
No, bring it on. I mean, I've been beaten down by bullshit in the last 2 minutes, so... So yeah, come on, bring it on.
Okay, so Overwatch is a video game.
It's true.
A
few people play it.
A couple of people do play it regularly. So firstly, the good part of it is that they released their new sort of animated short about May, one of the characters in the squad. I love these movies because they're so well animated because it's Blizzard. They should just hurry up and make a fucking Overwatch cartoon because I would watch it because they know what they're doing when it comes to animation. Also very heartfelt story. It's quite sweet. Having not even played the game, I like that I can get involved through it that way. But awkwardly, they announced a new map for the game, Junkertown, which is based in Australia. And they said some unfortunate things. Firstly, the signs in the level say take out, not take away, which is just cultural misappropriation and is a grave offense to our country. But more unfortunately, the trailer revealing the level apparently talks about how these robots want to come and take our land, says the white male Australian voiceover person. There's some cultural connotations in there that someone did not take into consideration.
It's not even a cultural thing that's unique to Australia either. No. I mean, this has literally happened to every country ever. Someone's taken someone's shit already. And
it's a thing in America.
It's a thing everywhere. Even the Europeans have been taking each other's shit for the last, 10,000 years, so...
Yep.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, it's usually the white man's fault. Bit of a lack of acknowledgement of the Aboriginal peoples there. So Jeff Kaplan apologized about the takeaway sign thing. Did not touch on the Aboriginal stolen generation, we stole their land and killed most of them thing. But who knows, maybe he'll remember that that's a thing at some point and apologize in one of his awkward developer videos.
I mean, I will say that that thing is something we obviously know about a lot because it's our own country, it's our own shit, it's our own garbage fire we got to deal with. So, basically not knowing, it's an ignorance thing, whatever, that's cool. But when something like that lands on the country, you're just like, and the country's just like, oh, shit. Like, you do the finger in the collar. Oh.
Yes, like, you done fucked up.
Yeah. So, whatever. It's Overwatch. It'll still make a bajillion dollars.
People
go nuts
will.
About it. Yeah.
Yeah, as a side piece of awkward news that didn't really make it in, they revealed the first sort of footage of Shenmue 3, the game that was kickstarted, funded perfectly, and then they announced they already had backing from a corporate entity anyway. The environments look great, but the character models look like they were ripped literally from the original games.
Sweet.
No facial movement whatsoever, which they've had to backpedal on to say, oh, the character models aren't finished, which why put the character models in if they're not finished or not in an appropriately presentable stage?
As long as there's a forklift, it's all good.
Did not see a forklift, if I'm being honest.
They're holding that one back.
This game could still be in jeopardy.
Yeah.
I think that will just about do us for this week's episode of the Indoorsman Podcast. We have, as always, been your guide to the great indoors, because that's what we do.
It says riff, every riff, week. Riff. I don't believe you riff, riff, riffed. You may have one riff, but you haven't...
I've put a sick guitar riff in three times. Did that sound good with post-flu voice?
I mean, you've got two riffs now. I want my third riff.
Hey, Cliff, shut up.
You going with that one as your third riff?
Yeah, that's what we're going with, man.
All right, I'll move on then. If you like our opening and closing music, it's Fuck Sidechain Compression on Game Boy by Rocco W. You can get it on Bandcamp and, you know, everywhere on the internet if you just search up him or that. And I recently put it on my MP3 player because, hell yeah.
Nice.
Because I put a bunch of extra stuff on there because I haven't updated it in a long time. But I chucked it on there because it's great. I love me some chiptune-y stuff.
It is good bleeps and bloops, and you should listen to them and his other stuff and buy his album because it's Bandcamp. You can pretty much pay whatever you want.
Yay.
So you should pay at least some amount of money.
Pay the same amount that I paid for In Rainbows by Radiohead. Zero. Radiohead don't need my money. They're rich as fuck. Plus, they don't even give a shit about my money because they're hell pretentious, but great.
That's true. If instead of giving money to Radiohead, you'd like to find us on the internet, you can find us at indoorsmanpodcast.com or The Indoorsman on Facebook, as well as at indoorsmanpod for both Twitter and Instagram, which is the place you can check out our cover art.
What? Two things? The same thing? Wow.
I know. It's revolutionary.
It's craziness. If you want to get in contact with myself or Matt individually, you can get us, myself at Cliff and Monkey and Matt at Ponk on Twitter. Or if you want to just send us an email, sometimes emails are best, you can get to us at contact@indoorsmanpodcast.com.
Yeah, and hey, give us feedback, give us suggestions of things you want to talk about. If you want to name and shame people you know for bad gaming habits, feel free to do that. Or tell us your deepest, darkest secrets. Who do you have a crush on? Who was that person you murdered that one time? Do you love your pet? Do you love your mum?
Do you love anyone? Can you love anyone?
Do you love us?
Are you a shell of a person with a black soul? I mean, if
and
you
is
are,
that why
we can
you
be
love
friends, because that's me.
That's pretty cool. It's kind of hot. We'd also love it, in between sending us your deepest, darkest desires and secret murder fantasies, to subscribe, review, and or rate the show on iTunes or your pod medium of choice, because that is good for us. And we like it when good things happen to us. Because it makes us happy.
Sometimes. You can't be happy with a black soul. That's just not how it works.
I'm going to go with having a very, very dark, extremely dark grey soul. So there's still a tiny, tiny ray of hope in there. Yeah. So,
It's not a complete void. It's just off void.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for now, he's been Matt.
And he's been Cliff. I'm going to go look and see if I can find a ripped copy of the KFC training video VR thing, because I legitimately want to play that. It just looks so bad. I want to fight Colonel Sanders.
I reckon next week we're probably going to have to actually talk about some Game of Thrones for a change.
Yeah, it's the end of the season, so that's a good thing.
I feel like it's best if that we haven't just talked about it at all, and we'll just drop on the table.
Yeah, I think the last episode's like 85 minutes.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. I'm already in the zone for it tomorrow night.
Oh, I'm already hard.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be at work tomorrow, but I won't be at work.
Just throbbing.
Yeah.
Thunk. Oh, so good. You're going to have to lay down a tarp.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to come a lot. All right, we're done.
Why do I feel like that's going to get cut at the end?